Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Inspiring business performance.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. Gary Harps is here. Gary's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, very successful entrepreneur, the author of a number of books, founder of three companies. Six Disciplines for Excellence is the first one that I know of that we helped him launch back in the day, and then his new book is called Six Disciplines, Execution Revolution. He's our good friend, Gary Harps. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. Gary, small business owners don't wake up in the morning saying, you know, I'm confused about the difference between continuous improvement and strategy. They just don't have those thoughts, Gary. But you think they might be having that confusion without realizing it, without realizing that they are.
Well, I don't think I know. We work with a lot of customers.
But you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying. They don't wake up thinking of it like that.
No, they don't. It's one of the first things we have to address when dealing with a customer. And they're very, very different. Strategy is top-down, very focused about what makes you different than your competitors, where continuous improvement says, how do I become better at doing the same things my competitor's doing? Very different.
Mm-hmm. So talk, you know, all right, so which comes first? Which is the one? Well, and now you're not saying that either one of those are wrong, right?
No, not at all. You just have to understand the difference in which is appropriate for you at the time,
and which is going to get you over the line the best way.
Yeah,
and help you become successful. Which is the next? Do I need to be thinking strategy today, or do I need to be thinking continuous improvement?
Yeah, and ideally, once you get control of one or the other, you can add the other and do both, but it's probably good to focus on one or the other first.
So you said strategy is top-down, you know, linear thinking, right? It's this is where I want to go, this is how I'm going to get there.
Yes, the reason it's top-down, I mean, to execute strategy is not top-down, but to define strategy, you can't have 10 different focus points. You've got to pick one. And that's what allows you to allocate resource to something very focused, where continuous improvement is a mindset that ultimately leadership has to endorse and support, but the ideas come from the front line.
Mm-hmm.
They come from the individual worker who knows what things they see the things every day that need to change or improve or costing money or wasting time.
So you're saying that the ideas that drive the method come from is what makes a difference. Strategy, the ideas typically come from the top, and continuous improvement, it usually comes from the people who are on the front line.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly. And it's executing strategy well involves a couple of key things. One, creating a very well-defined vision the clearer it is, the easier it is for people to grasp it, and then the work is getting everybody to align their time and energy and effort and innovation around that idea. So, you know, like Starbucks, their strategy is premium coffee. They try to make the very best cup of coffee you can, and all their innovation is around doing that. Or Krispy Kreme hot donuts, or Southwest Airlines short flights.
Right.
The great growth businesses have figured out really something to focus on to an extreme degree.
So how do you decide which one you should focus? Because you've admitted, you've allowed that you in any given day you'll use one of these. You'll focus on strategy. You'll focus on continuous improvement. What is it that's in front of you? What would be in front of you that would tell you to use and it's not that today I'll do one and tomorrow I'll do the next. You're typically get into a period of time where you'll do one of these, right? You'll either...
Well, yeah, I'll use an old example. You and I are old enough to remember when the auto industry in the United States was a train wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Rusted out late
70s and most of the 80s.
Yes, but Japan was eating our lunch in terms of delivering high-quality cars. And so there was a case where the United States, at least in the auto industry, needed some continuous improvement.
Right.
They needed to catch up with what Japanese were doing on basic things.
Their strategy had driven them into the ground.
It had. And so for a while, I mean, you got to produce, before you worry about making a car that's different, you got to make one that works.
Right.
So that's where continuous improvement comes, is if you're not doing basic things right and your competitors are not doing basic things right, you can differentiate yourself just by doing things right for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, the rest of the industry will catch up and everybody will start doing the basic things right, and then you got to shift to a strategy where you do something different, not just but different.
Are you saying that you look around you and say, okay, where am I stuck? Am I stuck because I don't have the right offerings and the right ideas, or am I stuck because which would come from your products? Or am I stuck because what I've been trying as the owner, as the leader of this organization, what I've been trying to do by telling people what to do, that's not working?
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to explain it. I'll give you an example of a small university we're working for. I know your clients are small organizations, and a university isn't exactly tiny, but we ask them, first question is, well, what do you have to do well to be a good university in general? And they listed a series of things, and then we said, well, how well are you doing those things? And two of the five, they were not doing well at all. Well, that's a sign to us is, okay, let's get those two things fixed before we worry about what you're going to do different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's you just start with the basic question, what do I have to do this well? And if you don't have good answers for that, then start with continuous improvement.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing the basics well, then you start shifting to, well, okay, I'm doing this well. Now how can I start doing things that are different, that are important to my customer?
But that takes an honest evaluation by you and your people, maybe even an outsider, someone coming in like you to help people identify where you're stuck.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And to be honest with you, most organizations, most leadership we come across, they mistake continuous improvement for strategy.
Yeah.
And they don't really understand what strategy
That's
is.
That's because a lot of times executives are like a carpenter. Everything they see, it looks like a nail. Hold on. Gary, give us your website quickly, please.
SixDisciplines.com.
Check it out. Quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the question, where are we stuck?
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
If you are a CEO, you know success is a matter of getting the right players in the right roles with the right goals. Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. Every coach is looking for the right combination to take their team to the next level. And now you can find the right solution for your business from Insperity. More than 100,000 companies are using Insperity high-performance HR and business solutions. From recruiting, employment screening, and retirement services to time and attendance, organizational planning, as well as performance and expense management. Or to move your company ahead as far and as fast as possible, ask about our workforce optimization solution. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your business performance advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened in the history of the marketplace. This is Jim Blasingame, and I want to tell you about an emerging new age, the age of the customer. For 10,000 years, businesses operated with age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But that age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that convey control from you to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're using age of the seller practices when customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make this transition from old practices to the ones that will help you meet those new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. That's ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blasingame, and I wrote this book for you.
Sir Elson bringing us back. 23 after the hour. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. And the one for my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Gary Harps is our guest, our good friend, longtime, more than 7-year Brain Trust member, author of Six Disciplines for Excellence and Six Disciplines Execution Revolution. SixDisciplines.com, right, Gary?
Yes, sir. That's the one. That's our website.
Check it out. Gary, we're talking about the difference between strategy and continuous improvement. One is top-down, the other one is bottom-up, folks. And so whenever I have, over the years, when I had my consulting company, and even now, from time to time, I'll talk to people I know, and somebody calls me and wants me to help them. And you know what my first question is? Where are you stuck?
Yeah.
They say, well, what do you mean? I said, where's your pain? And I try to ask them those kinds of questions because that, to me, that's how I discover what they...
Yeah, I would adjust. I mean, I think that kind of open-ended question is the right thing to do. The question we ask is, in your particular, you have to be good at to satisfy your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if they say, well, they're stuck, you get a different answer than you get, well, what do you have to be good at? And it's surprising how common the answers are when you ask that question. I mean, you have to know what you're selling. You got to pick something that's useful to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to be able to attract the customer. Then you have
right.
to deliver the goods. And then you have to retain the customer. It's those basic questions, and it's surprising how often you say, okay, you got these answers. Well, how good are you at this?
Right.
Well, not very good. Well, what are you going to do about it? So, you know, it's the same idea. Where's your pain? As long as they're concepts. As long as they're thinking right about what their pain is.
And sometimes it's amazing you have to help them answer the question because, for example, they're not used to getting those kinds of questions. And I'll say, well, all right, so let me ask you a question. As you mentioned in the last segment, is your product, are you able to get, is your product what customers want? Are you able to compete? Are you, do you have, and they say, well, yeah, I might compete if I could get enough product, if I could have enough inventory. And then you say, oh, so you have a capital problem. That's where you're stuck. Well, capital problem that's not a continuous improvement question, is it?
No, that's right.
That's a strategy.
And so, yeah, that's exactly right. And you mentioned that sometimes you need outside perspective. It's amazing how, so for all of us, you, me, everybody,
everyone,
we get so buried in our...
You can't see your own stuff. You can't edit your own writing.
Yeah, that's right. You just can't see the obvious. And so this university I mentioned, we just asked them, what do you got to be good at? And one of the things they listed is we have to be good at picking what programs to offer. And we then said, well, who here, how much time is the senior team spending on that topic? And they looked around at each other and said, well, maybe 5% of one person. Mm-hmm. And the president said, well, that's crazy. And she pointed to one person and said, I want that to be 90% of your job,
wow.
not 5%.
Yeah.
And just asking the simple question makes obvious to them the answer. And, by the way, this particular university went from 7 years declining enrollment to leading the area the last 3 years in growth.
And all they did was clear up how they should be doing their job.
And that's, yes, it was so simple.
In other words, they didn't really have to spend any money to turn it around.
No, they just had to reorganize who was focused on what. And
yeah.
So that's the good news when you can just think about the plain blocking and tackling, and continuous improvement is awesome. And saying, oh, this is broken, let's fix it.
Is it work behavior like raw steel? If you don't maintain it, keep it polished and painted, it'll rust. I mean, don't you need to go back and trust but verify, so to speak, with your employees, with your managers, make sure that they haven't run off the rails? Because a lot of times, what you see them doing, what you watch them doing, is hard to tell if they're actually, you know, on point, if they're actually, you know, focusing on what they should be focusing on. What do you think?
You have to have one of our six disciplines is what is really kind of a renewal cycle. It's verifying that the things we figured out last year we're still doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the science calls it entropy, but, you know, you take an ice cube out of the freezer, it melts.
Oh, listen, I had a meeting not long ago with some people, and I said, okay, did you use this tool that we talked about before? They said, oh, yeah, we used it last year. How did it work for you? It was great. We had a lot of success with it. I said, well, are you using it now? No.
Yeah.
Why did you stop? You know what they said? We don't know. I swear, that's the truth. That's a true story.
Yeah. No, I hear it. I believe it. I totally believe it. You know, we find in our own customers, the thing they rate number one in value from us is the fact that we keep coming back and asking them the same question you just said. Well, are you still doing what you said was important? No.
No? Why not? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's human nature.
Hey, Gary, give us the website one more time, please.
It is sixdisciplines.com.
And this is the kind of thing you do for customers, clients, right?
Yeah, that's what we do.
You help them get out of their own way, right?
That's right. Where do you want to go? And we help them go there.
Be sure to check out his books, folks. Six Disciplines for Excellence and Six Disciplines Execution Revolution. Gary Harpst, HARPST. Gary, good job today. Come back soon.
It's always good talking to you.
We'll see you next time. Gary Harpst, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back another day. I'll be back after these messages. I'm Jim Lassing, Games.
Well, our hearts be like thunder. I don't know why they don't.
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened before in the history of the marketplace. Hi, this is Jim Blassingame, and I want to tell you about a new age that's emerging right now, the age of the customer. Until recently, you've run your business with 10,000-year-old age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But the original age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that are conveying control from your business to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're going to market with age of the seller practices when your customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make the transition from old practices to new ones that will allow you to meet these new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blassingame. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com, that's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. and be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
If you're a business owner, who can you trust to stand shoulder to shoulder with to help your company prosper? Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. I have seen firsthand the role trust plays in team performance. And now you can have your own business performance advisor to help your company reach your goals. For more than 25 years, Insperity has helped thousands of America's best businesses succeed by putting high-performance HR and business solutions to work. Your Insperity Business Performance Advisor starts with the specific needs of your company and tailors a customized solution to unleash your business potential. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your Insperity Business Performance Advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened in the history of the marketplace. This is Jim Blassingame, and I want to tell you about an emerging new age, the age of the customer. For 10,000 years, businesses operated with age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But that age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that convey control from you to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're using age of the seller practices when customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make this transition from old practices to the ones that will help you meet those new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. That's ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blassingame, and I wrote this book for you.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. Very excited about having our good friend Nicole Galinas back on the show. Nicole's a longtime, 9-year member of our Brain Trust. She's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and contributing editor to City Journal, the author of After the Fall, Saving Capitalism from Wall Street and Washington, which is something you heard me talk about a lot on the show. And she's our good friend. Nicole Galinas, welcome back to the show.
Wow, 9 years. Well, thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me back.
How about that? 9 years, huh?
What happened to my 9 years?
I know. Well, I'm glad you're here. And
me too.
And as we look around the globe, there's a lot of financial distress, isn't there? There's Greece, continuing to be a bad, you know, bad reality TV series that keeps coming going on. China's stock market's collapsing. The government is coming, literally exposing itself as propping up its own economy. And then right here in our own hemisphere, we got Puerto Rico.
Yep.
So we got a lot of things that have implications for small business owners out here on Main Street, don't they?
Sure.
So talk to us about Greece.
Well, I think the thing that all of these things have in common is we have to let the markets work, and mm-hmm. we're not doing that. You know, no one ever mm-hmm. wants to do that. It's fine. It's understandable that China doesn't want to let the markets work. You know, this is a regime that has always wanted to control what the marketplace does, very, very state-directed capital.
Right.
So when they're faced with a stock market collapse, they don't want what has to happen, and just let the stock market fall back to where it should be, and so people can have this correction and move on. They want to try to prop it up, and it's not going to work over the long time. You know, the market is stronger than even the Chinese government. But
well, since you mentioned China first, there,
What's been interesting about China to me, and we had Gordon Chang on yesterday talking about this.
Huh.
What's been interesting to me about this is more than ever before, China, the Chinese government, is exposing itself as the de facto puppeteer behind the economy. You know, for a long time, they tried to act like there was real capitalism going on over there, and you know, cities were being built, et cetera, et cetera, and putting capitalism out front as if this was the new face of China. We now know that that wasn't true.
Sure, and we don't define things very well. You know, the Pope is going out there saying he hates capitalism. Well, a lot of the versions of capitalism, I can see why he doesn't like them. You know, the story about China kicking out all of these nomadic farmers and taking their land and putting them in these horrible concrete block towers. I mean, is this capitalism or is there something else? If people think of that as capitalism,
it's not.
I can see why they don't like it. But, you know, China at least has an excuse. They're China. They never trusted the free markets. We don't have that excuse, whether in the U.S. with Puerto Rico or in Western Europe with how they're treating Greece. And you know, what has to happen with Greece and Puerto Rico, really the same thing as in China. You know, people took a risk, and they took a very bad risk, and they're going to have to end up losing some of their money. If you lent money to Greece, whether you're a private investor, although there aren't many of those left because the Western European governments bailed them out, or you're the IMF and the European Central Bank and European Commission, all of whom lent Greece tens of billions of dollars, they lent money to a country that was insolvent, and that is not wise.
And instead of letting them go insolvent and taking a haircut, they keep continuing to prop it up. Greece has been going on for 5 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit ridiculous that this has been going on for, you know, the first rumbles came in 2009, and then they've been talking about how to fix Greece for five years now. And what the problem is, well, one of the problems is very simple. They borrowed far, far more money than they can ever pay back. And, you know, they are going to have to take a real write down on their debt, meaning
the big problem is Greece didn't want to change.
You shouldn't lend money to a country that doesn't want to change. You know,
and the other issue is, as we go to this break, Nicole, the other issue is the European Union didn't want Greece to drop out of the union. So that's another reason why they've been propping them up, isn't it?
Sure, and it was not a good idea to have a currency union without some way of dealing with these issues that people thought lending to Greece was just like lending to Germany. That's
exactly.
Not true.
That's well said. Quick break, right back with Nicole Galinas after these messages. 22, stay with us. Looking out for love.
If you run a business, you know your financial results are directly linked to the performance of your people. Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. Every team wants to operate at peak performance, and now you can with the proven workforce optimization solution from Insperity. This powerful combination of HR and business solutions is the most comprehensive business performance offering in the marketplace, delivering administrative relief, better benefits, reduced liabilities, and a systematic way to improve productivity. And since your business is like no other, this solution is customized to fit your unique company needs. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your Insperity business performance advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com, that's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products.
Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you. Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened before in the history of the marketplace. Hi, this is Jim Blasingame, and I want to tell you about a new age that's emerging right now, the age of the customer. Until recently, you've run your business with 10,000-year-old age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But the original age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that are conveying control from your business to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're going to market with age of the seller practices when your customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make the transition from old practices to new ones that will allow you to meet these new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blasingame. Thanks for listening.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel
James good. Brown, the late great James Brown, bringing us back 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. And my website's just smallbusinessadvocate.com, and the one for my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Nicole Galinas is the author of After the Fall, Saving Capitalism from Wall Street and Washington, which is an outstanding book I encourage you to check out. She's a Manhattan Institute senior fellow and contributor to City Journal. Very smart lady, writes and reports regularly on issues of the day. We're talking about, with Nicole, the Greek, the Chinese, and the Puerto Rican issues that are these are basically economies that are in and cultures. You know, you got to throw the culture in here, Nicole. I mean, the Chinese, I still say, well, when you go back to the, stick with the Greeks again for a minute, that the Greek culture, that the Greeks don't want to impose the kind of austerity on themselves that will help them get out of their problem. They have, their economy is in the tank.
Yep, and they have done a great deal of austerity over the past 5 years. You know, they have raised the pension age. They have cut back on existing
pensions. It's still not up to where it should be, though.
Significantly, and they have done a lot more with pensions and those types of things than places like New York City.
But then they elected the left-leaning government.
Well, I think one of the problems is you really don't want to do your austerity during the middle of a depression. I mean, we learned this 80 years ago, and this is a mistake that Europe made. You know, if your economy is shrinking, this is not the time to do these types of reforms. You do these types of reforms during the good times. You know, Keynes was right about a lot of things, including that you don't make massive spending cuts and have massive tax hikes during a recession. And now Europe wants Greece already raised taxes, but they want them to raise taxes again.
Yeah.
Raise taxes.
You can't do that on people who are already on their backs.
Right.
You
raise
backs.
Taxes on the tourist industry.
So,
that will hurt.
Let me ask you a question. The with the Europeans, do you think with the way they bailed out Greece and have continued to bail out Greece and other places too, do you think? I mean, of course, we did the same thing here in the United States, right? I mean,
we
printed money. We bailed out a bunch of banks, and I mean, how much difference is what happened? What the Europeans are doing with Greece, and what America did 7 years ago after 2008?
Well, one thing that they have in common is that we still don't want to take our market losses.
You know, right.
Financial institutions that lent people money for these houses that were overvalued. A lot of this debt should have been written down.
Right.
Instead, people have been paying back debt that they can't afford for, you know, the housing
bubble. And consequently, the economy's languishing.
Sure. I mean, the housing bubble peaked in 2006. That's nearly 10 years ago. And so we have had a lost decade.
A lost decade.
Trying
Thank
to repay all of this debt and not have the economic growth that we should have.
No, that's exactly right, and I mean that's one thing that, but politicians don't want to tell people that, do they? They don't want to tell people we have to take our medicine.
No, and the
and we don't want to hear it either, do we?
No, and no one ever wants to say your house is just not worth that much money. You know, it's not. It was mm-hmm. not some kind of amazing investment. The only reason why it looks like it's worth that much money is because we've got these very, very low mortgage rates, and so people who should not be able to afford a house can kind of pretend that they can afford a house.
Are you concerned, Nicole, that the more we do things like what happened in Greece, the more the Chinese are propping up their own economy, with the way the United States and the Fed looks at too big to fail, the hazard that's in that thinking, the moral hazard is in that thinking. Do you see ultimately this is a train wreck for the planet down the road?
Well, things could be going a lot better. We haven't handled this global crisis.
I mean, eventually you run out of money. Somebody runs out of money, right?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of did run out of money in 2008, and we've just managed to keep it going. You know, if you look at what China did after 2008, they had just a serious problem as we did, because we are their big export market. Western Europe is their big export market. These consumer economies were collapsing. They were worried no one's going to buy their stuff, and they're going to have massive unemployment. And so they started this huge, huge stimulus project, you know, building cities, building all kinds of infrastructure. It's good to build infrastructure when you need it, but not just as a kind of jobs creation
mm-hmm.
stimulus.
Right.
And they let local governments borrow a lot of money that they couldn't afford to borrow just to keep these jobs up.
They're printing money. America has printed money. Out of thin air. And eventually, that's got to come home to roost, doesn't it?
We have done a lot of things to avoid coming to terms with the fact
mm-hmm.
that people just borrowed so much money,
mm-hmm.
they could never repay it. You know, mortgage debt went from $5 trillion in the U.S. in 2000 to $10 trillion by 2007, 2008.
Yeah. Well, look at the debt. Look at the national debt. The national debt's doubled in the last 10 years.
Yes, and it would be okay for the government to be spending money to get us out of a recession, except for they seem to be spending money to pretend that everything was perfectly fine
right,
before
right.
2008, and so
yeah.
that is not a good thing.
And all that's done is put us into a moribund trajectory on the economy.
Yes.
Nicole, you want to give us a website, please?
Sure, we are at manhattan-institute.org and city-journal.org.
And when we come back, I'm going to ask Nicole to overlay all this on how this impacts you and me and out here on Main Street. 10 till, I'm Jim Blassing. Stay with us.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened in the history of the marketplace. This is Jim Blassingame, and I want to tell you about an emerging new age, the age of the customer. For 10,000 years, businesses operated with age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But that age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that convey control from you to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're using age of the seller practices when customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make this transition from old practices to the ones that will help you meet those new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. That's ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blassingame, and I wrote this book for you.
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com,
if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
If you are a CEO, you know success is a matter of getting the right players in the right roles with the right goals. Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. Every coach is looking for the right combination to take their team to the next level. And now you can find the right solution for your business from Insperity. More than 100,000 companies are using Insperity high-performance HR and business solutions. From recruiting, employment screening, and retirement services to time and attendance, organizational planning, as well as performance and expense management. Or to move your company ahead as far and as fast as possible, ask about our workforce optimization solution. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your business performance advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Welcome back. 7 till the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame. And I have a great visit with our good friend Nicole Galinas, senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute, author of After the Fall, manhattan-institute.org. Nicole, thanks again for being here. We've been talking about Greece and China, Puerto Rico. We haven't touched on that yet. I'll let you give us a quick report on that. But in many ways, Puerto Rico is very much like Greece, only it's right in our own hemisphere. It's one of our principalities, I guess. I've forgotten exactly. They're a commonwealth, but they're connected to us. They use our currency. What about Puerto Rico, and how is all this? What are all these implications for these troubled areas? What is this? How is this going to have implications for Main Street small businesses?
Well, Puerto Rico is another example. People lent them more money than they could ever pay back. And the real question is, why do investors keep lending money to governments and to people that cannot pay that money back? You know, part of this has to do with our very skewed monetary policy. Interest rates are very low, have been low for a long time. And so people in institutions, they need some kind of return, and they go out and take all these risks, and they think someone's going to bail them out. That's not to excuse their behavior. You know, they shouldn't be doing this. I don't go out and try to get a return that I can't get, and I don't expect someone to bail me out. Other people make a different decision. But, you know, that is part of it. Our globally low interest rates are causing people to take risks that they shouldn't be taking. And, you know, the OECD has warned about this, that the markets are becoming very, very skewed. And so...
Well, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that this is going to... I mean, one thing we know, small business owners on Main Street, Nicole, we're planted in the ground. We don't have the ability to spread our risks around the globe, and we don't get to do a lot of hedging. We're planted in the ground pretty much, and so we're kind of a hostage to the overall economy. And when people like investors in Greece and Puerto Rico and the behavior we're seeing in China, when those people put the national and local and global economies in peril, that puts small businesses in peril.
Yep. And my advice to business owners would be, just don't worry about a lot of this stuff. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. The best thing you can do is just create the best products and the best services that you can create and try to sell those products to the customers.
But you also have to do what they've been doing, and that's to deleverage.
Yep, and we all...
You got to be un-Greece, unlike Greece, right? You know, unlike Puerto Rico.
Sure. I mean, you should only borrow if there's a realistic chance that you're putting this money into investments that are going to pay off. And, you know, most small businesses are pretty solid about doing that.
Another thing are the politicians. You know, a lot of politicians are pulling a lot of these chains. They're making a lot of these decisions, these policy decisions, that are impacting investments.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I think small business owners need to do is focus on on the candidates that are affect their business be single issue voters for the success of their business. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Hillary Clinton gave her big economic speech yesterday.
What did you think about that?
Well, there was not a lot of specifics. I mean, the only thing she said about infrastructure was she wants to create an infrastructure bank. Who's going to fund this infrastructure bank? Mm-hmm. She talked about building world-class airports. But the mm-hmm. private sector pays for airports. You know, the mm-hmm. airlines pay for airport upgrades. Mm-hmm. When you take an airplane, you pay a fee. The airlines take that mm-hmm. and pay for the airport. And so this is not mm-hmm. a place for the federal government. So it just sounded like it was put together by a lot of different people. You know,
right. Well, then you talked about capitalism in the beginning of our visit. Her comments to me, I didn't hear all of them, but her comments to me didn't sound a lot like the capitalism that I know and love.
Well, I think both parties, you know, Hillary being obviously a Clinton, and they're mm-hmm. so connected to large corporations and taking all of these donations from mm-hmm. global companies and from foreign governments makes things difficult for them to show that they really mm-hmm. know what's going on, and that's a problem for a lot of these Republicans, too. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone is out of touch.
Yeah. I think that's the scary part for us out here on Main Street, because mm-hmm. our lives are pretty simple. They're not that complicated like you just described. Hey, Nicole, we got a lot more to talk about. Let's do some more of this. Come back real soon.
Sounds good.
Good job today on your reporting.
Thank
you. Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen. We always get smarter when Nicole joins us. Manhattan-Institute.com, right, Nicole? And City Journal, also. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were made for. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Welcome to the Small Business Advocate Show with your host, Jim Blasingame. The Small Business Advocate Show is presented by Insperity, dedicated to helping businesses run better, grow faster, and make more money. And now, conducting over 1,000 live interviews each year, the Iron Man of Radio.
I feel ready to go another 9 innings.
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Hello, America, and good day to our friends around the world. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being a part of my day. We've got an outstanding show lineup for you straight ahead. We've got a couple of really smart ladies joining us, a couple of long-term Brain Trust members, one going back over 11 years and one going back over 17 years. That's right. How about that? Isn't that great? People make that kind of commitment to you and me. People who continued. I mean, who else? Where else are you finding these kind of relationships on the radio, where you can year after year you get to hear this, you know, smart people who keep getting smarter and they're learning things. We got people who have been joining us now all these years, and every year, every 2 years, they're working on some new idea that you and I hear about oftentimes before they even publish whatever they're working on. If they're working on a book, oftentimes they'll serialize their book with us. And so you get it before the public gets it. We've got a lot of those examples. And so I'm looking forward to having Joanna Brandy and Dr. Patty Green back on the show. Joanna is the 17-plus member, Brain Trust member, original family member of our Brain Trust. And she says that it is possible to have a happy culture in your business. Do you have a happy culture in your business? Well, you know, the way I think of it around here is, as I tell my employees, we don't take ourselves very seriously, but we take our work very seriously. And I think that's a big part of being happy at work, is to be proud of what you do, but to also be able to have fun and laugh about it and to blend those two together. I'll see what Joanna has to say about that. And then Dr. Patty Green with Babson College, she's a professor of entrepreneurship at Babson College. She's got some markers that indicate what a growing small business looks like, which businesses are growing and increasing their sales and increasing employment and being more successful. What does that look like? That's coming up in the second half of the hour. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened before in the history of the marketplace. Hi, this is Jim Blasingame, and I want to tell you about a new age that's emerging right now, the age of the customer. Until recently, you've run your business with 10,000-year-old age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But the original age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that are conveying control from your business to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're going to market with age of the seller practices when your customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make the transition from old practices to new ones that will allow you to meet these new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blasingame. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Jim Blasingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com, that's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
If you're a business owner, who can you trust to stand shoulder to shoulder with to help your company prosper?
Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. I have seen firsthand the role trust plays in team performance. And now you can have your own business performance advisor to help your company reach your goals. For more than 25 years, Insperity has helped thousands of America's best businesses succeed by putting high-performance HR and business solutions to work. Your Insperity Business Performance Advisor starts with the specific needs of your company and tailors a customized solution to unleash your business potential. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your Insperity Business Performance Advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Stand by. Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being a part of my day. I'm Jim Blassingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. I'm glad you're here. Joanna Brandy's here. That's right, Joanna's back. Longtime original member of our Brain Trust, the customer care coach, the president of Joanna Brandy & Company, author of Winning at Customer Retention, also 54 Ways to Stay Positive, one of my favorite people on the planet. Joanna Brandy, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It is my pleasure to be back. I'm happy to be back, Jim.
I've missed you. Where have you been?
Actually, I have been working a lot, working with companies to try to help them get their cultures a wee bit happier.
There you
go.
The
word is out.
But
the word is out, thank goodness.
That's a hard job, though. I mean,
oh my God.
Making people, getting people to be happy, I mean, that's not easy.
You know, it requires so many different things. I just did a happiness survey. I work with a company out of England, just a marvelous, marvelous survey, and very, very comprehensive. And it really, you know, happiness at work encompasses a whole lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It encompasses the ability to use your strengths and do what you do well. It encompasses the relationship you have with your boss, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It encompasses how you feel physically and whether or not you're happy.
But some people
in your own
have
life.
So much baggage in their lives.
Oh my God!
That how can we hope to make them happy at work?
Well, you know, I think there are certain things we can do at work that can actually, you know, help them leave the baggage behind.
Yeah.
If we make the work interesting, we make the work engaging. I mean, you in your own book, you know, you talk about the age of the customer, and you need to have, in order to engage customers, you have to have engaged employees. In order to have engaged employees, they have to have the ability to use their strengths while they're working. So it means there really needs to be a good job match. And so many people, honestly, are in the wrong jobs.
Yeah, we see that a lot. And I do believe this. I do believe there are plenty of people, I've met them, by the way, who are not happy in their life,
mm-hmm.
but they're very happy in their job, and they wish they could stay at the job. When they get to work, it's like their world changes, and it's who they really are, and then they go home and they have lots of problems. And I do believe that as employers, we can at least help those people have a good working environment.
Yeah. Well, I think we can help all people have a good working environment. It has to do with your style of leadership. In all the companies I'm working with right now, I'm doing a number of things. And one is to teach the leaders a different way of leading. And you know that my background is positive psychology. So I'm teaching them techniques that come, the evidence-based techniques coming right out of the field of positive psychology. So they're dealing with people correctly and in a way that builds their confidence and builds their self-esteem. You know, I've been a consultant for 25
mm-hmm.
years. So, you know, my way of doing things used to be to run around with a yellow pad, not so dissimilar. But when I get to a company, even though I was usually hired by the CEO or the VP of marketing or something, I would go in and I'd say, I need to interview your employees. And so I'd run around my yellow pad, I'd go from department to department and talk to people. And the one phrase that I heard the most in 25 years was this one. How come they never notice me when I'm doing anything right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm doing something wrong, they're all over
mm-hmm.
me.
They don't catch them doing something right.
So the first premise is, how do we catch people doing something right and then bring that to their attention in a way that they know that we appreciate what specifically what they did, not just to add a girl or add a boy, you know, but how do we do that effectively over time? We now know, because there's so much science behind this, that in order to have a high-performance organization, we need five times more of the good stuff than the bad stuff. Same thing as a happy marriage. We need five times more of that affirmation and celebration and that recognition and that acknowledgement than we do focusing in on someone's weakness and trying to fix them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, why do we do that? Because, is it because when we see them doing things right, we say, okay, that's what I'm paying them for.
We see them
doing things wrong, they say, okay, that's costing me money.
You know, I've worked with enough business owners to say, yeah, that's probably it. Because most of the people that I teach, that, you know, I work with CEOs all over the country, and most of the time they say, that's what I'm paying them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're also, you know, by the way, we've studied quality. You'll go back to the TQM days. You were around then.
Oh, yeah.
What did we look for? The number of defects. We search for the defects.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at the human brain. The human brain is designed to keep us safe, so we're always looking for danger. And in a business, somebody doing something wrong, we perceive, oh, danger. So there's a lot of reasons why we do what we do, but we're finding the more we bring the younger generations into the workplace, the way we did things doesn't work the same anymore.
Boy, that's the truth.
It's not just that the world has changed, it's that the people have changed, and the younger people don't respond. If you look at I recently did a speech right there in Georgia for the independent insurance agents, and when I was on the phone with them, like I always do before I do a speech for somebody, what else can I help you with? I went in to talk about customer care and positive leadership, and they said, well, could you speak a little bit to the generational differences? I said, I sure can. So I pulled out an old presentation I'd done, and I refreshed myself. And boy, you know, it really makes a difference what generation we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we grow up with outside of our family influences, outside of our school influences, what we grow up with makes such a difference. And now we've got 4 to 5 generations in the workplace trying to work side by side.
Well, and I'll tell you, the younger generation needs a lot of positive feedback.
Well, have grandchildren, honey. Come on, what do we?
Well, I have employees too, and that's no. You're right about that. There is a difference.
No, but I'm talking about the fact that we train them to need a lot of praise.
I know. No. I didn't.
Good job,
say that.
Joey. Good job, Janet. Good job, Derek. Good job, Autumn. You know, all
absolutely. No, I know. So the question, it seems to me, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment. What I want to talk about is, you know, how much of their happiness are we responsible for as employers? How much happiness are we responsible for? Because we can't save them from everything. We can only do what we can do. And I'm going to get Joanna to help us flesh that out and identify that. And that's customercarecoach.com. Is it still that?
No, I'm at returnonhappiness.com.
There you go, returnonhappiness.com.
But the old one still works.
It still works, though. But I love that old one. returnonhappiness.com, though. That's the good one. Quick break. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.